Hello, and welcome to What's the Big Idea? I'm your host, Michelle Tuck-Ponder. Today's episode is brought to you by Destination Imagination, commonly referred to as DI, the leading creative problem-solving experience for children. Through DI's innovative project-based educational experiences, participants gain the skills that will set them up for success in careers like the one we're going to be hearing about today. Learn more about DI at destinationimagination.org. On today's episode, we are pleased to welcome Dr. Chris Jones. Dr. Jones is the Chief Technology Officer at iRobot Corporation. He's worked in the robotics field for over 25 years, inventing and delivering innovative robotic solutions that empower people to do more in their daily lives. Joining us today from Boston, Massachusetts, please welcome Dr. Chris Jones. Hello. How are you?
I'm great, Michelle. Thanks for having me on. I look forward to chatting with you.
Oh, we're so excited that you're joining us today to talk about an area that is of great interest to so many of our kids who are involved in DI. So I guess my first question is, can you give us a 1-minute description of your job, what you do?
Sure. I'll try to keep it at a minute here. So as a chief technology officer at iRobot, you know, my job is about helping our very talented team build and deliver innovative robotic solutions. Folks might know us best for the Roomba robot vacuum, which we kind of helped create the category and have been pioneering home robotics since releasing, you know, that product in particular since 2002, even though the company's been around since 1990, doing robotics since 1990. My role in particular as part of that whole organization here is to really help with helping to craft or create our vision and our strategy for reaching into the future and inventing and continuing to innovate in the domain of robotics, always thinking about how we can do more for people in their homes in particular. As part of that role, I might spend time working with our engineering team, doing technology strategy, technology roadmaps, diving into the details with our talented team on the specifics of certain technologies or development initiatives. And it might be work with our marketing team or our commercial team or our product team to help translate those innovations into compelling and marketable new products that we look to take to market. So it's a lot of time both helping to shape and invent new technologies in supporting our team to do that, but also how do you kind of communicate that and translate that into real world products that we can bring to market?
In DI, we talk a lot about the 4 C's, which sounds like a lot of what you do in your job: communication, collaboration, critical thinking, and creativity. Which of those 4 skills do you use the most in your work? And can you elaborate a little bit on how you use them?
That's a tough one. I think all of those 4 C's, I think you're right, are an important part of kind of the daily life in my job or daily life in general, I would say. If I have to pick, Michelle, if you can let me pick 2, I think.
Yes.
I'm going to pick 2 that I think are maybe the most, I don't want to say the most valuable, but certainly very interesting to me. And that's critical thinking and creativity. I think they have a great kind of push-pull relationship that really is visible on a very regular basis. So from my perspective, whenever we're working on inventing new products and technologies, in order to do that, to invent, you're really kind of having to push the frontier into new ideas. You're trying to do something new, fundamentally new. In order to do that, you got to be creative. You got to think very creatively. You're trying to get outside of your comfort zone, outside of what you or others might already know or find as plausible or, you know, as evident. So you really have to be creative, push those frontiers when you're looking for those new opportunities to bring something new to the world. So creativity is, I think, is always there. Mm-hmm. But to balance that, you also have to have critical thinking, because, you know, one thing that I always think about, or we always think about in our organization, is, you know, invention alone isn't the answer. You can invent a lot of things, if you don't get it all the way through to having an impact in the world, you've kind of missed out on an important part of what you could or should be doing. And that's translating invention to something that has an impact in the world is what I would call innovation, right? To be innovative, you've got to both invent, but you've also got to what we'd call reduce it to practice, which means make it real, right? Deliver a product. You want to see, in our case, as a consumer products company, you want to see that product on the shelf in the store and people finding the value in it and buying it, right? To bring it into their lives. And it's that translating from invention to bringing it to life or bringing it to reality requires that critical thinking. Because oftentimes, you know, an invention is maybe not grounded in reality in all ways. There are things of that invention that aren't plausible. Like you can't actually do what you're trying to say, or you can't do it, let's say, at a price point that would make sense for a consumer to buy, or maybe it's too hard to make it robust enough to survive, a day in the life of a busy family household, right? So you have to balance that inventiveness, right? You might have great ideas and it looks great on paper, your prototypes look great, but it doesn't quite make it all the way to reality. And that's where critical thinking comes in. As you're inventing, you also have to kind of pressure test your ideas, right? You have to honestly evaluate the invention that you're trying to nurture, that you're trying to progress. You have to critically think about it. Why wouldn't this work? What would I need to change in order to make it work? How could I evolve it? How could I pivot my thinking or pivot what we're doing to get it to a place that's more likely to be real? And one, so that's a balance between creativity and just kind of open-ended creative thinking and critical thinking, which is perhaps taking those creative ideas, shaping them, trimming around the edges, adding detail in certain places, elaborating in certain ways that allow you to get to something that is real, that is plausible, you can actually deliver as a product.
I'm really interested in how you're talking about that, because of course you've been a team manager, so you know that's part of what we teach in DI. But from a business standpoint, and I'm as the CEO of DI, we have a lot of ideas. We have a lot of great ideas about where we want to see the company go. It is that critical thinking piece that's so important in terms of, well, how do we make this into something that can really happen? Do you start with the end in mind? Are you, or what's the process?
I would say for me, you have to come at it from both directions. You want a vision, you want a North Star, right? That's like, it may be distant in the future for you, but it's compelling, right? You're like, if we could do that, that's gold. Like that's a win. It's a win for the business. It's a win for the consumer, let's say, but it's a win, but it's a North Star. It's a long ways away. So now you have to back that up and say, well, what can we do today, tomorrow, next week, next month, over the course of the next year to make progress toward that North Star? And one way that we kind of use to shape or evaluate that journey, let's say, is kind of drawn from an area called design thinking. And this is kind of a way of thinking about that problem that has three different dimensions that we use. One would be technical feasibility. A second is customer desirability. And third is business viability. So this is, design thinking is not, just ours. This is something that we're drawing on the broader community, a framework from the broader community. But if you think about any idea, you're trying to understand, technically, can we do this? Or what would we need to do? Or what would need to be true for us to be able to technically deliver on that North Star vision? There's very importantly, customer desirability, which is, would anyone care? Like, even if I could do it, would someone find value in that? Again, we're a consumer product company, so would someone find it compelling enough to buy and bring into their household? So it needs to be valuable or desirable from a company. And then, of course, as a business, does it make sense from business perspective, business viability? Like, okay, I can build it. People would want it. Does that support a viable business? Like, could we make money on it? Would it allow us to build or grow our business around it? So it's that pyramid, right? You have to balance all three of those things. And it's not a linear process. It's not something that you solve one and then you go on to the next one, and then you go on to the next one. Really, you're playing with all three of those. And I use that word literally. You're actually playing with it. You're trying, well, if I did this, well, what would that do to the, if I did this on the technology side, what would that do to the business viability? Maybe the technology is too expensive, or maybe I do this technology, but no, that's going to be really hard for a consumer to use. That's not going to be desirable from them. So you're having to really work with that interplay of kind of those three dimensions to help shape that invention into an innovation, right? Something you can actually deliver to a customer in a sustainable, from a business perspective, in a sustainable way. So, Michelle, that's kind of maybe one framework that we use to think about it. You need to satisfy all three of those: the technology, you got to think about the customer or the user of your invention, but also, does it allow for the sustainability of a business, right, in our sense? So those are a few things we use as you're trying to shape that invention all the way through to innovation. And that means, and this is a core to DI, it's a lot of prototyping along the way. Mm-hmm. You're prototyping something. What does that mean? You know, maybe you have a, in our case, maybe you built a robot and it literally has duct tape on it. It's not unheard of, right? You're building a new concept. It literally has duct tape on it, because you're trying something new. You might want to take that to someone in their home and say, hey, what would you think of this? Why don't you use it for the afternoon and give us some feedback on this? Do you think that's valuable or not? What would you want different out of it, et cetera? And you come back and you build new prototypes. So you're constantly building something, critically thinking about it, evaluating it against those axes, trying something a little different as you work your way toward that ultimate solution.
Awesome. That's great. That is absolutely fascinating to me. I'm going to switch directions a little bit, because when I'm not working at DI, I am actually a member of my local board of education in Princeton, New Jersey. And we have a lot of young people who are interested in computer science and robotics, to the point where we don't have enough classrooms to support the number of students.
Good to hear.
It's great news. It's great news. And so my question is, what advice would you give to a young person who thinks they want to pursue that as a career?
Sure. Maybe I'm a little biased, but I think it's a great career to be thinking about. Certainly if you have some, you feel like you have some passion about computer science and robotics at the beginning. So advice I'd give is maybe generally to say, study broadly. So robotics in particular is a unique, somewhat unique discipline in that it's very multidisciplinary. Whenever you're building a robot, you have to think about or have the opportunity to develop mechanical things. You're trying to build something. I mean, a fundamental part of robots are they move. So you're dealing with mechanical things. So that's one area. Understanding, as a young person thinking about robotics, getting familiar with mechanical mechanisms. How do gears work? How do motors work? Right. All of these things that are part of kind of the mechanical mechanism of different types of robots. So that's one. There's also, of course, a lot of electronics in robots. You've got processors involved. You've got sensors involved. Robots, typically have a variety of ways in which they try to sense the world surrounding them. If you want a robot to intelligently, I'm going to use my context, if you want a robot to intelligently move through the home on its own, it's got to have a lot of sensors on it to be able to perceive that home around it, right? So it knows I need to go straight or turn left or right, or, that's a kid's toy on the floor that I should avoid and not vacuum up. It means that they have a lot of sensors involved. So sensors, electronics, there's a lot of that electrical engineering or the electronic guts of a robot that's a very important part of robots. And then finally, there's software. You have to write the we'll call it the brains, right? The intelligence that's running on that robot to take all of that sensor input in and ultimately turn around and control the action of the robot, drive the motors, right? For example. So robotics is a very cross-disciplinary or multidisciplinary field. So getting involved in all of those in one way or another to get some familiarity with all of them, I think is very useful. Maybe ultimately you specialize in mechanical engineering, more on the mechanical side, or computer science, more of the software side of robotics. That's great. But it's always good to kind of understand how all parts of that system will work, because they're very tightly coupled. They're very integrated in a robot. So advice I would give is study broadly, you know, be creative, prototype, experiment, kind of have fun at that intersection of the mechanical bits, the electronic bits, and the software bits that ultimately make up a robot. So that's, in a nutshell, I would encourage folks to really, you know, take some time and see where, dabble in all of those areas, see where what might be the most fun for you, and then, you know, continue along that journey. There's a lot of depth in all of those disciplines, so there's not going to be a lacking of fun things to be trying out.
What do you think about the role of humanities, study of humanities in all of that?
I could go on and on about the multidisciplinary nature. I think that mm-hmm. the electrical mechanical software is kind of the core bits under a robot, but you're absolutely right in that there's a very large field, let's say, called human robot interaction. And that's all about how do people interact with different, in this case, robotics, right? It's very related to human computer interaction, but human robot interaction is about how do people, how could or how would or how could you think about how people would interact or respond to robots in their proximity? So there's a lot of work on that, on, let's say, psychology, or, you know, the thought processes of how people think about technology in their lives, et cetera, is an important part. I'd also, maybe just drawing on a bit of my background, an opportunity I had in grad school was the intersection between biology and robotics. Actually, there was a fair amount of work that I had to do or become familiar with in studying, in my case, ants, the behavior of ants or ant colonies, understanding how they work. It was applied to work I did in graduate school on how you get a lot of different robots to collaborate. You maybe look back to biology and say, well, how do ants do that? I also spent some time with seals and sea lions. How do seal and sea lion colonies work together? How does that society function? Which gives you some interesting insights that can be applied back into robotics. So multidisciplinary, when you're building robots, I mean, these are devices that think, that sense, think, and act. They move around the world. There's a lot that can be drawn on by understanding how people do that, how animals do that, how people might interact with technology. Like that multidisciplinary comment, I think, can go in many different directions. So you're absolutely right. There's a lot from humanities to natural sciences, et cetera, that can be certainly brought to bear in studying robotics.
That is very cool. That is very cool. And it especially resonates because I know so much of your work involves technology in ways that impact people in their homes. That's pretty intimate. Like to have a Roomba or any device in your home coexisting with you, you really do have to know how people think and how they function. So when you look to the future, how do you think we'll integrate technology even more into our day-to-day life? What potential opportunities excite you the most? What do you see happening down the road?
Even more. I think what really kind of has been capturing my mind for a number of years, and increasingly so, especially here recently, is actually around the intelligence that you can put in products like robotics, or, you know, many devices in our homes or everyday lives, but artificial intelligence, machine learning, I think these domains are going to be bringing a lot to the table, and new opportunities to improve products that we use, to do new things in products that we can use. So I think that area of artificial intelligence really excites me. I think it's going to be quite impactful in a lot of different ways, primarily are in many different ways. But one way that I think about a fair amount is when you can start introducing more intelligence into any given product, really the way I maybe think about it first and foremost is how that intelligence in that product can be used to better understand what you're trying to do with that product, what the context is around that product, so that it can do the best job for you and in the context and kind of respecting what it is that you're trying to get done. So, you know, it's not a, I can draw on some examples that we have at iRobot, right? Historically, maybe with a Roomba, you press the clean button and it kind of goes around and bounces around your house and vacuums the floor. So it's not a care in the world to, I don't know if anyone's home. I don't know what's around me. I'm just driving a vacuum around to clean my floor, clean the floor, which that was the case, 10 years ago. Today, we're at a point where even Roomba is really striving to understand what you, the user in your home, are trying to get done and how it can do kind of the most precise or the most targeted job it can to get done what you want. So we get to the point today where, the Roomba is able to respect if you're home or not, right? You can actually tell that product, I have a rule in my house. If I'm home, I don't want you disturbing me. And the Roomba will sit on its dock. When you leave home, that's its cue to get out and kind of get as much done for you as it can when you're not home. And as soon as you get back home, it'll do a beeline straight back to its dock and sit there until you leave home again. It's learning to respect you and kind of the rules of your home. All the way through to, it has the opportunity now to understand things like where the dining room is, where the dining room table is in the dining room. It's smart enough to know that so that you can now give it a command, which would be, essentially telling Roomba, hey, Roomba, go clean around the dining room table. We just finished dinner. The kids made a mess. I don't want you vacuuming the whole house. I just want you vacuuming around the dining room table because I know there's a mess there right now. And the robot, the intelligence in it, is smart enough to know how to respond to that. It's just going to drive straight to the dining room, go to the table, clean around the table, and go back to the dock and get out of your way. So it's that type of intelligence to understand the context of the home, understand what you're trying to get done, understanding your rules so that it can best respect you and kind of deliver the optimal performance for you and your home. And I think that same type of intelligence is going to be brought to bear in other products around the home. Other smart home products inside the house, other products you'll experience in the workplace, and just out and about in your daily life. I think that the intelligence, the machine learning that's kind of behind the scenes, or artificial intelligence that powers it, I think that's going to be a pretty transformative thing that's going to become more and more available in more products and more experiences that we interact with in our everyday lives.
When I think about that, I over the holidays, I had an opportunity to watch how small children interact or interface with technology in a way that was unfathomable when I was a kid, they talk to Alexa and they ask her to read a story, or they are so comfortable with technology as part of, is really integrated into their existence in a way that previous generations didn't have. And I really wonder how that's going to, how that's going to impact us going forward. Is there going to be an expectation for more and more and more technology by these folks, by these young people who have grown up with it?
It might, and it may be more. It may be redirecting it, right, into saying, and this is maybe going back to the point of what advice would I give a young person thinking about robotics is, to get in there and experiment, start to encounter, understand, interact with these different technologies or these different disciplines, because that's what's going to help shape your understanding of this doesn't work. This does work. This kind of works. So as you're you know, as a kid is growing up and starting to study in more detail and enter a, you know, profession, et cetera, is you bring with you that understanding of, I remember when I dealt with that voice assistant and how it just didn't work in this way, but man, it was really powerful in this particular direction. There's more to be mined there. There's more that the technology can do in that direction. And if I combine that with, you know, other technologies or other things I've seen, I think that's where you just have that innate understanding of how things work or don't work and how you can combine them in unique ways to deliver that next generation of innovation. So it's great, you know, when you're seeing young folks who are interacting with those technologies, experiencing them, understanding how they work or don't work, what their limitations are, because that's what's going to help give them that foundation to say, what next? What should we do with this? Which direction should we take it next? So it's great to hear, you know, as you see young kids interacting with the latest and greatest.
Right. And I'm also excited about the accessibility of technology to so many kids across, you know, economic and around the world. And I had a chance to spend a couple of weeks in Africa and they are really accessing technology in a big way. And that's super exciting that it strikes me as just being a lot more accessible than things may have been in the past. So I'm excited about that, too. Mm-hmm. So we are now at the part of our talk where I get what's called rapid fire. And I get to ask you questions and you will give me, or I'm going to ask you to give me your gut reaction, one word answer to these questions. So are you ready?
Gut reaction, one word answer. You can't hold me accountable for that. Okay. Good.
Absolutely. All right. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. What is your favorite food?
Tacos.
What is the wallpaper image on your cell phone?
Picture from a space telescope.
Ooh. As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
An astronaut.
Huh. If you started your own talk show, who would be the first person you'd invite as a guest, living or dead?
Richard Feynman, physicist.
Would you rather have the power of invisibility or the power of flight?
Invisibility.
Oh, I agree. Is there anything else you'd like for us to know before we wrap up?
I think for everyone listening to know, I mean, A, how great Destination Imagination is. I'm honored to be here talking with you, Michelle. I grew up with a predecessor of Destination Imagination back prior to DI itself. And I think it was a very formative experience for me in my career. So that's the first thing that people should know. If you don't know about DI, or you need to learn more, I encourage everyone to do so. Second is, of course, keep an eye out for the latest and greatest robots coming out there from iRobot and others. I think that there's a lot coming in the field of robotics. So encourage everyone to keep their eye out for the latest and greatest in that field.
What big ideas excite you now?
Oh, big ideas. I got to follow, I think, with my theme of the artificial intelligence that we were talking about earlier. I think the big ideas that are exciting me now are, you know, around this area, you know, generally called generative AI, generative artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. These are the systems that you're seeing able to create novel new images, write novel narratives, generate new music, all crafted from kind of the creative inputs from people helping to shape those outputs. I think this generative AI and the various systems that are rapidly coming onto the scene here in the last year or so are going to be, I don't want to say revolutionary, but I think they're going to be very impactful in a positive way to help people take their creativity and their invention power to kind of a new level. So that those generative AI systems, I think, are a big idea that's in the ether right now that really excites me.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, Thank you so much for being with us today on What's the Big Idea? We would like to acknowledge that this episode of What's the Big Idea was recorded on land originally inhabited and cultivated by the Lenape, Miami, Massachusetts, Pawtucket, and Shawnee Nations. We are grateful for this land and for the people who have stewarded it for generations. This episode was produced by Kelsey Selleck, with additional material provided by Renee Rainville and Johnny Wells, and music by Kevin McLeod. Special thanks to our guest, Dr. Chris Jones, for joining us today. And you can learn more about Dr. Jones's work by visiting iRobot.com. To learn more about our show and about DI, visit us at DestinationImagination.org. If you'd like to inspire even more big ideas for young people around the world, consider making a charitable contribution to DI at DestinationImagination.org/donate. I'm Michelle Tuck Ponder. Thanks for listening to What's the Big Idea?
Join us in giving the gift of creativity. For decades, Destination Imagination has been helping kids from all walks of life find what makes them unique. But we can't fulfill that mission without supporters like you. A donation to Destination Imagination will help us deliver quality educational experiences that foster creativity and interest in STEAM fields. Help us ignite the spirit of collaboration with events that span six continents. Help us empower the leaders and innovators of tomorrow. Donate to Destination Imagination today. Learn more at destinationimagination.org/donate.
Destination Imagination taught me how to work as a member of a team.
Destination Imagination taught me leadership skills.
Destination Imagination taught me that there are infinite ways for me to express my creativity.
If you're ready to awaken creativity and ignite a love of learning for your child, join Destination Imagination today. Hi, I'm Johnny Wells, Director of Education at Destination Imagination. DI provides unique educational experiences that give students the opportunity to create projects, solve problems, learn new concepts, and have a great time in the process. Just listen to what some of our alumni have to say.
I use what I learned in DI to solve problems at work, at home, and in every aspect of my life.
I use what I learned in DI to give me confidence when I try something new.
I use what I learned in DI to make a positive impact within my community.
Today's DI participants are tomorrow's innovators, problem solvers, and leaders. If that sounds like a good fit for you and the young people in your life, we'd love to have you join us. To get started today, visit DestinationImagination.org.